Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I am Kamala Ramprasad De Silva, Chief Executive Officer of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute, and it is my pleasure to welcome you to today's session entitled Avoid Noncompliance, Fulfill Legal Obligations Created by the Nonprofit Organizations Act of 2019. We are so happy to have so many new participants for today's session, as the majority of you are in fact first timers. We do have a few attorneys. I want to say a very special welcome to all of our community-based groups who are joining us for the first time. All the presidents, secretaries, treasurers, and we have a few members as well who have registered from as far away as Los Bajos to the south, closer home to me here in Coover, and also rural Mamoral. So, everyone, and as a result, we are very happy to be able to share this information with you. Forgive me if it is that the audio seemed to disappear for a little bit, because we have so many people registered. My phone has been ringing constantly, and I'm using the phone for today's meeting because I also take notes on my laptop during the time of the presentation. So, excuse me if it interferes at all with your experience for today's session. I also want to say a very special thank you to the representatives we have present today from the Ministry of Community Development, Culture and the Arts. These officers were instrumental in getting our community-based nonprofit groups together and having them register for today's session. So we say a very special thank you to these officers. In welcoming all of you, I want to share that the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute is a nonprofit membership organization, and we welcome everyone who wishes to join us in our purpose of improving corporate governance practices in the region. For persons online who need to earn CPDs or PDUs as part of your ongoing certification, you may use these sessions to claim your points. In order to do so, however, you need to have been registered for the session, and you may write to us to get a letter of verification that you were in fact a registrant. Also, you will be receiving a few questions via poll while you are on today's session. We would sincerely appreciate your feedback, as this helps us in our quest for continual improvement. I am also very happy to remind you that the Institute will be hosting its inaugural Governance Week using Zoom. So it's an online event. It's a conference and activities that would be held from Monday, June 29th to Friday, July 3rd, 2020. The opening event, however, will be held on Sunday, June 28th from 4 p.m. And I'm excited to share that this opening event will feature the keynote address by Professor Bob Garrett, who is a global, in fact, one of the world's leading authority on corporate governance, and also the author of the book, The Fish Rots from the Head. Each day of conference, we will focus on a different broad theme. On Monday, we will focus on the private sector with the keynote address coming from Marlene Street Forrest, the CEO of the Jamaica Stock Exchange. Tuesday, June 30th, we focus on state-owned enterprises with the keynote from Donald DePalm from Curaçao. Wednesday, July 1st, we focus on family-owned businesses, and the keynote address will be delivered by Annette Rahal. Thursday, we focus on groups and subsidiaries, and we are very happy to have Professor Frank Koneman, who will be joining us from Holland to deliver that opening keynote. He will be accompanied by Mr. James McFedron, who is a senior advisor to McKinsey and previously vice president of private banking for Scotiabank in Canada. So we have, in fact, an extremely exciting lineup of persons for our week of conference. The conference days begin at 11 a.m., so it allows you the morning to be able to take care of your business activities. And we go for a little bit later, end up at 6:30 p.m. Apart from our keynote, we have a range of panel discussions with a number of experts from around the region. So look out for details on these. You'd be getting it on email, but feel free to visit our website as well at www.caribbeangovernance.org. Okay? So as we turn to today's session, you may be aware that the Nonprofit Organizations Act was passed in June 2019. And this, in fact, created a range of obligations for filing with the company's registry. Now, since we have not had word from the government, at least as far as I am aware, it means that these legal obligations take effect this month, June 2020. Now, good governance is required of all organizations, whether you're private sector, whether you're nonprofit or community-based. So part of your governance is ensuring that you comply with these legal requirements. Today, we are very happy to welcome Attorney at Law, Sonji Pierre-Chase, from the JCS Caribbean Law Firm and a member of the Trinidad and Tobago Chamber of Industry and Commerce, who will be leading us in the discussion of the more important provisions of the Act and would look at the obligations created for all not-for-profit organizations. Just before we begin with the presentation for Mrs. Chase, or let's say Sanji and I were in law school together, so it's hard for me to actually say Mrs. Chase, right? But just before we go to the presentation from Sanji, I just want to make a few housekeeping announcements. We would like everyone to remain on mute during the session. During the entire presentation especially, you will be invited to make contributions or ask questions when she is finished. There's an icon at the bottom of your screen for those of you who may be new to Zoom. It allows you to raise your hands when you want to get our attention. You will need to unmute yourself and then press the mute icon again as soon as you are done so as to minimize any disruptive noises. You may also make comments or ask questions in the chat feature during the session, which we may read out afterwards. Today's technical support is provided by Christy Johnsler Crouch from SmartServe Limited. Christy's information is also on the chat, so if any of you would like to get online support for your Zoom meetings, feel free to contact Christy because she provides excellent service for us. Please note too that this meeting is being recorded, and that the recording will be sent to you afterwards by Christy. She will also ensure that the recording is available on the CCGI website, so it's available to all our members. Just before we go to Christy though, let me just check, is our chairman online? We are normally...
He hasn't joined okay. yet.
All right, so usually our chairman of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute, Mr. Nigel Romano, is present for our sessions. As I'm not seeing him, we will then move on straight to our presentation. Sonji, as I said earlier, is an attorney at law, and she is quite versed in this new legislation. She did a presentation for the Trinidad and Tobago Chamber last year, and you know, she was really very kind in agreeing to provide today's session for us. So Sonji, I'm going to hand over to you, and you will be able to start share with your PowerPoint as well. Okay? Good morning, Sonji.
Good morning again, Kamala, and good morning to all of your members and those in attendance to your seminar today. Now, I've participated in quite a few webinars, but have not presented via Zoom. So this is a first for me. So I do ask everyone to bear with me in the sharing.
I'm sure you'll do well.
The sharing of the screen part of it, that part is new for me and going through the presentation.
Okay, so at the bottom of your screen, you should see a little square with an arrow, a green one that says share.
I know how to do it, but it's going through the presentation while it's up. So let me pull it up now.
Yes.
Make sure I have the correct one.
Okay, so we'd like to remind all our participants to take off their videos, please, and to ensure that their audio is on mute so that we don't have any disruption to the session as well. Okay?
Okay, are you seeing the presentation, Kamala? The
not as yet. So I'm not seeing you as well either. Let's see who is. Okay, yes. So you have now started screen share, so it should show up just now. Okay, so it is a little bit slow, but that's all right. It should load.
Yeah, now we're looking at.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys can see it now?
No, it's still saying the screen share is loading.
Oh. Okay, while we wait for it to load.
Yeah. Yeah.
While we wait for it to load, I would give a few introductory remarks on the app. And hopefully when I'm through, it will be up.
Yeah.
As Kamala correctly said, this particular piece of legislation was enacted in 2019, May 2019 to be exact. And when I start going through my presentation, the initial part of it concentrates on the background to this particular act. It comes out of our compliance objectives with FATF, and one of the obligations or the recommendations from FATF for all countries in ensuring compliance with AML and CFD requirements. So the legislation was one of a slew of legislation introduced by the Attorney General in 2019 to bring us in line with our compliance on the FATF. The other two critical pieces of legislation that were passed simultaneously with the Nonprofit Organizations Act was the amendment to the Companies Act to address the issue of beneficial ownership in companies, and I know quite a few of you would know about that, to be aware of it, and of course the anxieties relating to filling out those Form 45s and Form 41s with respect to beneficial ownership in companies. And the other one was the Civil Assets Recovery Act that deals with forfeiture of assets that arise out of ill gain. So the Nonprofit Organization Act was one of those three legislations passed in May, June 2019, addressing our FATF requirements. Is it up now? It's showing up on my end, Kamala. Kamala, your mic is off, so I didn't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I actually am not seeing it on my end as yet. Christy, are you seeing it? Are participants seeing the PowerPoint?
No.
Right, Sanju, you want to try reloading it again?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I am seeing it. This is Dave Bim. I'm seeing.
You are seeing, but are you seeing the PowerPoint itself, or are you seeing a blank
screen?
No,
I'm just seeing the presenter. I'm not seeing the PowerPoint.
Right, so that's what we're asking. Yeah. So the PowerPoint. Yeah.
Okay, so I have to click stop here and restart. Huh?
All right, yes.
Let's wonder if she may have more than one screen up and may have to select it. There it is.
Yes, excellent. Right, so you're good to go, Sanji.
Well, no, you have seen it and I'm not seeing it. Okay. Kamla, your mic is off again. I'm not hearing you.
Oh, forgive me. I always mute my mic when I'm not speaking, so I don't disrupt. But here, what? Would you like to email it to me and let me share it, and you'll just tell me you want to forward the slide?
Are you seeing it, though?
Yes, I'm seeing it.
Okay, because it's now up on my screen.
Okay, excellent. Good. So we should be good to go.
Okay. So as from the introductory remarks, this very short seminar is understanding or understanding the Nonprofit Organizations Act, which was enacted, as I said, a couple minutes ago in June of 2019. So the reference number for the act is number 7 of 2019. Please take a note of my little disclaimer to the end of the presentations. We always do that when we deliver presentations to clients, or not clients, but the members of the public, so that you understand it is not legal advice that we are rendering, but simply part of our educational enhancement to the public. So this is what I was indicating to you a bit earlier. Understanding, before I get into the act, I just needed you to get the progression of the act. So it's understanding how the act came about, or what was the reason for this particular legislation. So I do have a couple of slides that explain the rationale behind this piece of legislation. And as I said, it arose out of our obligation under FATF. For those of you who don't know what that acronym FATF stands for, it is the Financial Action Task Force, which is an international intergovernmental organization. And they have set goals to create and promote the effective enforcement of legal and regulatory and operational measures to combat money laundering, terrorist financing, and proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. So a couple of times that I've done this presentation, the very first question that people would ask is, what does that have to do with a charity that I'm running, or a charitable organization that I'm involved in, a nonprofit organization, or a club, you know, a hockey club, a swimming club that I'm involved in? What does that have to do with money laundering, terrorist financing, or the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction? It all seems so far-fetched. But what FATF indicates is that there are elements in society, and when I say society, I mean global society, there are elements of society that use these organizations, so use these clubs to siphon financing towards money laundering, towards terrorist financing, and towards the financing and proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. So unfortunately, there are elements of society that use what we would call good parts of our society, charitable organizations, to advance, you know, bad stuff. So under FATF, there are 40 recommendations, and these 40 recommendations must be adopted by all countries. So all countries must implement these 40 recommendations and must satisfy FATF that they have implemented these 40 recommendations. And these measures, which are internationally endorsed standards for, as I said, effective implementation of AML, CFT, and PF. PF is the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction measures. And they ensure some measure of transparency in the financial system, that it makes it much easier to detect criminal activity, and of course to give countries the capacity to successfully take action against criminal activity. So the 40 recommendations issued by FATF was in line with addressing those issues relating to financial institutions' ability to detect criminal activity, and then also the ability to take law enforcement to take successful action against such criminal activity. So in 2016, an evaluation was done on Trinidad and Tobago to determine our compliance, and as to how far we had reached in terms of addressing or introducing measures to implement the 40 recommendations that were issued. And I will go a little bit more into that in a bit. But But what it was found after that evaluation exercise was completed was that we were non-compliant in two recommendations, recommendation 7 and recommendation 8. We were partially compliant in 13 recommendations, and we had low or moderate level of effectiveness in most of the immediate outcomes. And the immediate outcomes really were what was our expected achievement measures from the, those recommendations that we had implemented. So the recommendations that we had in fact implemented, there were supposed to be some measurable outcomes called immediate outcomes. And we had very low or moderate level of effectiveness in those. So in February of 2019, this is what FATA did. They then identify a number of countries who they found were deficient in the introduction of these recommendations and had several deficiencies. And of course, on the slide, you're seeing those countries. And there you have it. Trinidad and Tobago was named as one of those countries, and we were ranked with countries like Serbia and Ghana, you know, countries that you from a global perspective that you know are really involved in issues of the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction and terrorism and stuff like that. Trinidad and Tobago isn't, but unfortunately we were identified and linked with those countries that were very deficient in the implementation of our AML CFT measures. So, of course, an action plan had to be developed. So when the Attorney General went up to Washington, this is my discussions with him, when he went up to Washington and was given, of course, the news of our ranking in terms of where we are, immediately an action plan was developed to aggressively bring us in line with our compliance objective. So coming out of FATF announcement and the European Commission's publication that Trinidad and Tobago was on the list of countries with very weak anti-money laundering and terrorist financing arrangements, certain measures had to be adopted in order to get us in line. This is just a slide that I wanted to bring to attention as to what was the outcome of our gray listing, and our gray listing came as a result of, as I said in that previous slide, the fact that we were identified amongst those countries that had deficient compliance objectives, and then of course identified by the European Commission as having a very weak AML CFT regime. It resulted in us being gray listed. And it meant that international financial institutions would want to have very little to do with a country that is categorized in that way. So most of the international financial institutions would have had an issue in trading with us, and the results could have been a reduction in trade, problems with our international loans, the downgrading of the country's rating, and of course, economic sanctions. So the reason why I'm just going through these slides is just to show you the impetus or what was the reason behind introducing some of these legislative measures that were introduced in 2019. Yeah. So remember in a couple of slides back, I said to you that FATF had identified that we had not introduced two recommendations, recommendation 7 and recommendation 8, if you would recall. So recommendation 8, this is what recommendation 8 sets out. Recommendation 8 specifically deals with non-profit organizations, right? And it says that countries are to review the adequacy of their laws and regulations as they relate to non-profit organizations, which were identified by FATF and the European Commission as a vulnerable group to terrorist finance and abuse. Countries should apply focused and proportionate measures in line with risk-based approach to such a non-profit organization to protect them from terrorist finance and abuse. So what FATF and the European Commission point is, while we, in our very naive way in Trinidad, when we think of a nonprofit organization, what pops up in our mind are all those community-based organizations that really get to the needs of people, that really addresses social issues, whether it is for the advancement of sport, the advancement of culture, the advancement of religious pursuits. But those organizations that draw on our heartstrings, so to speak, and really meet the needs of people. So in our minds, we wouldn't see anything bad coming out of those organizations. But what FATF and the European Commission found is that those organizations had no protection, and it represented a weak link where it was open to abuse, that persons with ill intent can in fact use these organizations because they draw people heartstrings. They can use these organizations to further the objectives of terrorist financing and the proliferation of mass weapons of mass destruction. And it is in that regard that they opine that it was important to have some measure of protection of these organizations to ensure that they are immune, so to speak, from terrorist finances. And so I'm continuing. So on this recommendation 8, so measures to be introduced were to protect the organization from terrorist finances by including 1, terrorist organizations who pose as legitimate entities, 2, by exploiting legitimate entities as conduits for terrorist financing, and of course, including the purpose for freezing assets, and 3, concealing or obscuring the clandestine diversion of funds intended for legitimate purposes to terrorist finances. So in implementing recommendation 8, this is what FATF recommended. For you to implement recommendation 8, this is what they expected countries to do. To identify your nonprofit organization as a subset, and understand that it was vulnerable to financing abuse, and of course not the entire sector will be, to review the adequacy of existing laws and regulations relating to that subset, and then to perform adequacy checks, which must identify the nature of terrorist financing threats and must consider the adequacy of other risk mitigation measures, including policies and working closely with the nonprofit organization sector and introducing, of course, self-regulation measures. Imposing new standards is not mandatory. This is what FATF indicated, but it must reveal that the standards in place, in force, are appropriate. And then what is more, if the standards are too extensive or too onerous, then FATF will consider them to be deficient, which makes sense. If it is too extensive and too onerous for people to comply, they just will not comply and they defeat the whole purpose of protecting the sector. So when, before the enactment of this particular legislation, there really was no legislation in place to deal with non-profit organizations on the whole. Actually, for someone to engage in a non-profit organization, and I'll come to a definition in a bit, really not much was required. So for instance, if we take a remote part of Trinidad, let's say Moruga. So you have a village in Moruga, and there is a need to get kids more involved in sporting activity or some form of cultural activity. And these visitors come together and form themselves into a group, because that's an association. It's a group of persons with a common goal, a common idea, and they raise funds to advance that goal, advance that idea. So it's the advancement of a purpose. That's an association. And it's actually a non-profit organization. It's a non-profit association. It's a group of persons who come together with an idea, a common goal, a common purpose. And then, of course, they either pool their resources or they raise funds. In most instances, they don't have the resources, so they have to raise funds. They have to either have bake sale, cake sale, or request people to contribute to this grouping to advance the goal and advance the objective of this association. And that entity is a nonprofit entity. So it could be as fluid and as informal as that, and it could be as it could be more formal or more structured to a person or a group of persons who decide, okay, we want to form an organization as a legal entity, and they actually go to the Ministry of Legal Affairs, the Attorney General in Legal Affairs, and incorporate a non-profit company. So you have a legal entity that is separate and apart from the individual. But they're both non-profit organizations. So you have an informal group, which is a group of persons coming together with a particular purpose, a particular idea, a particular objective. And then you have a group with the same thing, but they decide to formalize themselves into a corporate body. And both groupings would be classified as a non-profit organization or community-based organization. And before this act, there was no legislation addressing those two entities. The only legislation that would have existed would have been the Companies Act for those persons who wish to have themselves formally incorporated. All right? So let's proceed. So recommendation 8, I said this to you earlier before we formally started. Recommendation 8 works in conjunction with other recommendations, recommendation 24 and recommendation 25. Like recommendation 24 relates to the transparency of beneficial ownership of legal entities and the require adequate and accurate and timely information which should be maintained. And then of course, recommendation 25 as well. So remember when I said to you in 2019, when the Non-Profit Organizations Act was passed in Parliament, there were other pieces of legislation that were simultaneously passed, and those legislation were passed in conjunction with this one, but to meet our objectives under Recommendation 24 and Recommendation 25. The one dealing with the amendment to the Companies Act that relates to beneficial ownership in legal entities, and then, of course, the Explain Your Wealth, as we call it, Civil Asset Recovery Bill that deals with the forfeiture of assets that were earned or received out of LGAIN. I want to put this slide in the mix, and we're going to come back to it a bit in the end, probably when we have our Q&A, which speaks to some other legislation relating to AML and CFT. It's the Proceeds of Crime Act. And what we have set out in this slide is the offenses relating to the Proceeds of Crime Act. So money laundering offense results in, well, of course, upon conviction, a fine of $25 million and 15 years imprisonment, failure to disclose knowledge or suspicion of money laundering results in a fine of $250,000 and 3 years imprisonment, failure to make a suspicious transaction report or suspicious activity report to the Financial Intelligence Unit, a fine of $500,000 and 2 years imprisonment, on summary conviction, or you could get 7 years on indictment. Financing of terrorism, 25 years imprisonment, and then failure to disclose information relating to property used for the commission of offenses under the Anti-Terrorism Act and the FIU is 5 years imprisonment. And why is this slide important, guys? Non-profit organizations now, by the enactment of the Non-Profit Organizations Act, are listed as listed business under the Proceeds of Crime Act. So for instance, I am an attorney at law, and the area of practice that I engage in, which is the buying and selling of real property, it means that my business, my firm, is a listed business under the Proceeds of Crime Act. And that listing of my practice, what I do under listed business, means that I have certain obligations under the Proceeds of Crime Act, under the Anti-Terrorism Act, and under the FIU Act. And if I fail to comply with those requirements, there are certain consequences. And those consequences, I said, are the most extreme ones here for you, could result in severe fines and, of course, imprisonment. So let's get straight into the app now. Now that you understand the background of the app, I hope you do, and why the app came about, I hope you do. But of course, I'm available to answer any questions in the end. Getting specifically down to the act itself. Remember, I said I was going to give you a definition of a nonprofit organization. And I kind of intimated as to what it can be. And I said it was going to be classified as a group of persons. So you have a group of persons who come together. And their coming together is really to promote a purpose, to promote an objective. It is not about making money. So remember, we talk about those group of persons in that village of Maruga. When they came together, it's not about the getting rich and who getting money in their pocket. They came together, what, for a primary purpose. And the purpose is because they saw that in their community, there were kids who needed some sense of direction, either culturally, in a sporting way, and they came together to achieve that goal, to achieve that objective. And they formed themselves into a group, an informal group. They may not have had a constitution or a bylaw or rules or anything, but they formed themselves into a group, and they had the little tea parties, and they sit and they meet, and they talk about what next they're going to do in terms of a project to achieve their purpose. So a nonprofit organization really can be classified into two categories. You have an unincorporated association and you have an incorporated association. So that group that we spoke about, that group in Maruga, the group of villagers in Maruga, they would be classified as an unincorporated association, a body or a group of persons who isn't a legal entity separate and apart from themselves, but they come together, they comprise themselves together to advance a particular purpose. Then we have an incorporated association. An incorporated association now is a body, a group with certain corporate attributes in the main, and they are incorporated as a company. So they are incorporated as a company under our Companies Act and identify itself as being established for a particular purpose. So you see, the end result is always for a purpose. It's not for profit, it's not for gain, but to advance a particular purpose. So you have unincorporated association and you have incorporated association. And you remember I said to you, before the passage of the Nonprofit Organization Act, the only legislation really that governed nonprofit organizations governed those organizations that were actually incorporated as a legal entity. Yes, incorporated under Section 308, Subsection 2 of the Companies Act. And I will get into what 302 says in a bit, right? So what are these purposes we're talking about? So the purposes of a nonprofit organization include the advancement or promotion of a patriotic, religious, and I want you to take note of each of these phrases that I'm using. Patriotic, religious, philanthropic, charitable, educational, cultural, scientific, literary, historical, artistic, social, professional, fraternal, sporting, or athletic purpose, with some other purpose that is for a useful objective. So you see how far and wide this is. And this actually was pulled from Section 308(2) of the Companies Act. So this is Section 308(2) of the Companies Act. When a company is incorporated as a non-profit company, it has to identify one of these that is its primary purpose. So say, for instance, you are a literary genius and you realize, okay, we have this skill lacking in Trinidad and your passion is to improve, literary writing and literary appreciation among young people, and you decide to incorporate a company for that purpose and to push that as an objective, then you are a nonprofit company. Or it could be for a religious purpose, it could be a cultural, it could be a social, a sporting. So it's very, very wide. I remember the first time I did this presentation to the Trinidad and Tobago Chamber, one of the questions that was asked of me was whether the Nonprofit Organization Act extends to religious bodies. And it's yes. It's yes. So the Nonprofit Organization Act seeks to provide for the registration, regulation, and supervision of all non-profit organizations. So remember those two classes that I spoke to you about, unincorporated and incorporated? So everybody has cast a wide net and everybody's brought in under this wide net under the Non-Profit Organizations Act, okay? This slide I just put in there because I wanted you to see the rapid progression of this act. It was introduced in Parliament on the 22nd of March. It was enacted, meaning it was passed both in the House and in the Senate by the 23rd of April. And then it was proclaimed by the President on the 11th of June, 2019. So it is now law. I have partially proclaimed it, and I will tell you which part of the act isn't proclaimed yet. It's just a thought. It was proclaimed by the President on the 11th of June, 2019. So as of the 11th of June, 2019, this legislation became law. And for those of you who are not very familiar with how bills become act, when it's introduced in Parliament, it can be introduced either in the lower house in the House of Representatives or in the upper house in the Senate. It has to go through both houses. It may go to committee stage to be debated. And once it's debated and it's passed, for it to be passed, it has to be assented to. But even when a bill is assented to, it is not law that is enforced as yet. For it to be law that is enforced, meaning that it's applicable in Trinidad and Tobago and that you are required to comply with it, it has to be proclaimed by the President. So what you may have is that a piece of legislation goes through the parliamentary process. It is assented to and not proclaimed. And if it's not proclaimed, it means you don't have to abide by the terms of that act. You don't have to do anything. You can just sit back and say, Roxford, you don't have to do anything with me. Once the act is proclaimed, it becomes binding law and you are to comply with the act. So in the case of the nonprofit organization, it's just to make the point to you that it is law as of the 11th of June, 2019. So you were required from the 11th of June, 2019 to start complying with this act. Yeah? So let's get on to the particulars of the act now. Hopefully we are progressing well in terms of time, Kamala. So the act defines what a nonprofit body is, whether incorporated or non-incorporated. And I have that A there. And if you look at that A definition, and if you compare it to what I just read out to you one slide back, which was section 308(2) of the Companies Act. It is really a replica of that section. So under the Nonprofit Organization Act, which said it's a body of persons, whether this body of persons incorporate themselves or they don't incorporate themselves, even though just in Mayaro, but they are established primarily for the promotion of patriotic, religious, philanthropic, the whole slew that I just went through for you, then that body of persons is considered to be a non-profit organization. Yes, the beginning of the definition has whether incorporated or not. So once you establish for a purpose, and the purpose is one of those things inside it, you are considered to be a non-profit organization, and you're required to comply with this particular legislation. And then it carries on its business without pecuniary gain, which happens to be for both entities, whether incorporated or non-incorporated. It carries out its objectives for without pecuniary gain to its members, officers, except, of course, reasonable compensation for its members. So say, for instance, we take your organization, Kamala, which really is a non-profit organization, but you have to be paid, your staff have to be paid, so they expect that there would be compensation for services rendered. But the purpose for which your organization was established is not the pecuniary gain. The purpose for which it was established is for one of those objectives listed there. So in fact, your organization is a non-profit organization and is required to comply with this act. Yeah?
Yes, absolutely, yes.
And then, you know, people think, oh, a non-profit organization doesn't make money. And that may not be so at all. There are some non-profit organizations that make lots of money. Actually, it might be making more money than some trading companies. You know, some trading companies, when you look at their balance sheet, they may not be making half of what a non-profit organization makes. Remember when I said to you that a non-profit ideology is what pulls at our heartstrings? Because if we are passionate about a purpose and we find an entity that promotes that purpose, we want to be part of it. And it being part of it is financial contribution. So some of these nonprofit organizations are very wealthy nonprofit organizations, but the profits that are generated don't go into the pocket of the officers of the company. They go towards promotion and advancement of the purposes and goals of the company. Yes? So you do have nonprofit organizations that are quite profitable. Yeah. With the passage of the Act, Section 5.1 says all nonprofit organizations, say friendly societies, must be registered. And Section 5.1 actually creates an offense. It is an offense for any person to operate a nonprofit organization that is not registered under the Act. So, for instance, for all of you on this call, and I've seen it's about 78 of you. If any of you are part of a nonprofit organization, whether incorporated or non-corporated, from the 11th of June 2019, it would have become an offense for you to operate that organization if it was not registered with the FIU. And I'll come a bit more into that. Yeah? So Section 5.1 creates the offense that you cannot operate a nonprofit organization in Trinidad and Tobago unless that nonprofit organization is registered under the Act. And this is the nice part I like to tell people. A person who contravenes subsection 5.1 commits an offense and is liable, you know, if you want to have a paid state vacation, is liable on conviction, on indictment, so it's indictable conviction, to a fine of $50,000 and imprisonment for 5 years. Yeah? And I said earlier that the Act was partially proclaimed by the president in June 2019. Really, it's just about three sections of the Act that were not proclaimed. So Section 5.2 is one of those sections that have not been proclaimed. So what the Attorney General sought to do is to give a period of time for that transitioning without you having to face the loose around your neck, because that's what Section 5 is. It creates a loose around your neck that failure to comply, I might end up in jail for 7 years and have to pay the fine of $50,000. So Section 5.2 is not law right now, but it could become law anytime, if you understand what I'm saying. I'm not saying to you that you should not comply with the Act, because Section 5.2 is not law. You are required to comply with the Act. It's just that the penalty has not been proclaimed as yet, because the Attorney General wanted to give a period of transition for persons to move from the unregulated stage to the regulated stage. So nonprofit organizations currently registered as companies under the Companies Act shall be deemed to be duly registered under this particular Act. So if you are an operator of a non-profit company, so your entity was actually incorporated under the Companies Act, automatically you are classified as a non-profit organization under the Non-Profit Organization Act. So you didn't have to go and re-register. What the Registrar General would have done is transition those nonprofit companies to the new register that is created of nonprofit organizations. So companies that were registered prior to the Act and the Companies Act would have been transitioned to a new register established called the Nonprofit Organizations Register, and as pursuant to Section 8. Yeah. So coming out of that, arising from that, there is no need for a non-profit company in good standing. If your company not in good standing, you ain't file annual returns and all kind of craziness going on there, then, you know, it's a problem. So once you were in good standing to re-register, you already established under the register of non-profit organization, all you had to do was to complete your AML, CFT, PF risk assessment and submit it to the Registrar General within a period of time. And now the time that the Act provided was 12 months from the date of commencement of the act. Now, usually, as I said, when I started, it's the first time I'm doing a webinar, so I like to be so interactive with my audience. I would have asked, what was the date of commencement of the act to make sure that persons were actually listening to me, but I can't ask the question. So the date of commencement of the act, Kamala, you wanted to answer.
Yeah, no, I think you can ask the question and we'll just ask participants to unmute, answer, and then they could mute their mics again. Because, yes, it's nice to be interactive. So, I would like to answer, Sanjeev.
Who wants
the
proper answer? What was the date of commencement of the act?
11th of June.
Is that Chaitram?
Yes.
From Maria. So you were listening. So the date of commencement is the date that the act is proclaimed. I said that the date actually when the act becomes law. The 11th of June. So if we were to work on mathematics, if section 27.3 told us that within 12 months from the date of commencement of the act, you were to perform a particular act, then what date were you to do what you were supposed to do? I wonder if Chaitram will go take that guess again.
Yeah, you guys can answer again.
What, to comply with section 27.3, if I'm asking the question again, to comply with section 27.3, what would have been your cutoff date?
The 11th of June, 2020.
Yesterday. So as of yesterday, all you operators of non-profit companies were required to complete your registration process. Remember, the registrar would have created a register of non-profit organizations and would have transitioned to that register of non-profit organization, non-profit companies that are in good standing. So once you are an operator of a non-profit company in good standing, you would have been transitioned to the register of non-profit organizations for this act. As an operator, you would then have to complete that process, and the completion of that process pursuant to 27.3 required you to, within 12 months from the date of commencement of the act, well, as they had in brackets, or such longer time as the Attorney General may by order determine, submit these forms to the Register General. And as Chaitram correctly told us, that was yesterday, the 11th of June 2020. Now, in preparation for my little chat with you guys, I really did go to check to see if the Attorney General extended that time, because I know he granted a whole slew of extensions relating to the Companies Act. And from my investigation, there's no such extension, or no such extension has yet been granted.
I'm going to talk
with the company's registry to confirm if they are aware of an order granting the extension. And from my contact with the company's registry, with one of the legal officers of the company's registry, they had indicated that as far as they're aware, an extension has not been granted. It's not that an extension will not be granted. We know that the Attorney General indicated that an extension is going to be granted. But in terms of the actual order, I am not in receipt of the orders yet. And from my discussions with the company's registry, they are not in receipt of the orders yet. Yeah. Trevlon wanted to say something, I think. Trevlon, Kata, no? All right.
No.
Moving ahead. So under section 27.1, so that was 27.3 we were just chatting about, right? 27.1, all other non-profit organizations. So 27.3, I dealt with first because they dealt with companies, non-profit companies. So Kamala, I think your organization is a non-profit company. So organizations like yours that are a legal entity, their compliance requirement was 27.3 to submit the risk-based questionnaire to the Register General. 27.1 deal with every other non-profit organizations that are not companies. So all our CBOs, NGOs, everybody else, unincorporated and the like, fall under 27.1. And all those non-profit organizations that were in operation immediately before the date of commencement of the act, I have an error there, I have 23rd of April, it was 11th of June. may continue to carry out the activity without registration under the Act for a period of 18 months. So again, what the Attorney General sought to do was to give a grace period. So not as soon as the Act came into force, that was the end of you and your nonprofit organization. You were allowed to continue your operation as a nonprofit organization for a period of 18 months, but then you had to transition towards the legal requirements required. So after that 18-month period, or it could even be before, I mean, it just gave you that 18-month period to give you enough time to do the transition in. But you are now required to be registered pursuant to 27.2 with the Registrar General's office.
Sanjay, we have a question from Deborah.
And then you have to transition and you are required to submit your registration to be a nonprofit organization under the Act, failing which Section 5 applies. It is illegal to operate a nonprofit organization, whether incorporated or unincorporated, without it being registered under this Act.
Sanjay, before you go on, we have a question from Deborah, I think it is. Deborah, you want to ask your question quickly, please?
Yes, I do. I was looking at the proclamation, so I wanted clarity because it's saying that even though it's dated June 11th, the date fixed for it to come into operation is June 14th, as in a few days later, as opposed to the 11th.
Yeah, I don't. I printed it, but I don't have it. But if it did give an extension, then the date that it is said it comes into force will be the actual date. So the president signed it on June 11th, and the president can in fact state it is not the signed date. What other day is the date of commencement? So if from the proclamation order it says it's not the date of signing, but it gives the 14th day. The 14th day of June, 14th day of June is in fact the commencement date, and the 12 month comes from that date. So whether it was yesterday or is Sunday, which is the 14th, the point is that the period for compliance is imminent, or was imminent, as the case may be, in terms of doing that transition to be registered under the Nonprofit Act. Michael, wanted to ask something?
Yes, can I add something?
Sure.
You mentioned that the cutoff date was June 20th, right, to register.
Michael, just a correction. I had said June 11th because that was the day that it was proclaimed by the president. But Deborah's point is that in the proclamation order, the president indicated that the date is the 14th. So it's not the 20th at all.
Okay. What I'm trying to ask here is that you say the other part of the law is yet to be finalized. In other words, that we will not be charged until that other part is passed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, Section 5.2 of the Act imposes the penalty operating an NPO that is not registered under the Act. It doesn't mean that you don't have to register. It's just it goes in tandem. You have to register, you don't register, there's a penalty. So the section that deals with the penalty, that section has not been proclaimed as yet.
But the section that deals with
registering, that is in the law. So you have to register.
I agree. Thanks.
So it's just that they can't charge you at this time because that section relating to the penalty is not law at this time. And it really was the aim of the Attorney General to give that ease of transition for persons so they don't feel that they have a gun to their head to transition. And you don't know when they would make it law. So my point is, don't think that because the penalty section is not law that you could take a glorious time to deal with the registration process. Because you just don't know, like a thief in the night, you know, they operate in Parliament, a thief in the night, they They come and make it kind of smoke. And then the next day you see, you know, the police come knocking on your door and you want to know, well, I'm a good abiding law citizen involved in all of this charitable work. Why are you coming knocking at my door? But yes. So let's get back to the registration process. So you remember I said you have to complete a registration form. Let me see if this works. I want to just pull up the form for you, if it works. So this is what the form looks like. It's form one, the new form under the app. The forms are available at the Ministry of Legal Affairs, the Attorney General and Legal Affairs. You fill out the form, your name of your organization, your address, telephone number, and who are the controllers. I'll get into the details of who the controllers are in a bit. All right, so you complete this form, and this form is to be submitted to the Ministry of the Attorney General and Legal Affairs, the Registrar General Department. So you see it asks for the name, address, email address, telephone contact number. And this completed form has to be submitted with a photograph, IDs of the controllers, and of course, the next part of the form process is the completion of the risk assessment questionnaire.
Okay, so Sanjay, the form didn't show up, but what we can do is if we get a copy of this form, we can send it with the recording to the participants.
I would email you the form.
Okay, thanks so much, Sanjay. So participants, you would all get a copy of the form, so you'd be able to take it back to your organizations and peruse to be able to comply, okay?
Okay. All right, so let me see if I can X out this form without Xing you out. Okay.
Nice. Well done.
There you go. So, I wouldn't bother to open the question as well, because when I clicked on the link for the form, you said it didn't show up. So, the next link I had was the link for the questionnaire. So, I would send both of them to Kamala, and she would share them. As I said, both are available at the Ministry of the Attorney General and Legal Affairs. And both forms are to be completed. You remember in an earlier slide, I said that what FATF recommended was that your regulation of the nonprofit organization sector had to be via a risk-based approach, because it is a fact. The majority, and I don't want to say all in Trinidad and Tobago because I don't have that information that the Attorney General and members of national security may have. The majority of non-profit organizations or bodies in Trinidad and Tobago are not involved in terrorist financing, money laundering, and proliferation of mass destruction. You know, we are not involved in that. We can say that as a fact. So the extent of the regulation on the nonprofit organization sector is really based on the risk posed by each entity or each body. But to determine the level of risk, the risk assessment questionnaire has to be completed. And then the Registrar General with the FIU will then determine how far its regulation and oversight will go for the particular entity, if you understand the point I'm making. So all nonprofit organizations, all bodies must be registered. That's step one. Step two is the actual regulation of the body, regulation of each entity. How far and how extensive that regulation will go is determined by the risk that body or entity poses. And to make that assessment, comes out of the completion of this risk-based questionnaire, and then you will be classified heavy, medium, or low, just my terminologies I'm using, right? Or low regulation. If you're a non-profit company, then in addition to those two forms, you have to submit your certificate of incorporation or constitution or bylaws, as the case may be, the photo identification of each controller of the NPO. I'll get to what a controller is. And then, of course, if you are an NPO that obtain charitable status or obtain exemptions from corporate taxes, then you have to submit that letter of approval that you would have gotten granting you charitable status and granting you the exemption from corporate taxes. So those are the things that you submit to the Register General's department. The Financial Intelligence Unit is the regulator of MPOs. And the regulator, as I said, really relates to the extent of regulation that is required after that risk-based assessment is done. Yeah. The Proceeds of Crime Act, I mentioned this earlier, and it's just a repeated, the Proceeds of Crime Act has been amended, and non-profit organizations are now listed as listed businesses under the Proceeds of Crime Act, requiring compliance with CML and CFC. So as I explained before, like with my company, because I deal in the buying and selling of real property and other areas that is listed under that first schedule, I am required to comply with those CFC requirements. And I'm going to go through what they are for you. So here we are.
But just before you do that, Sanjay, there's a question on the chat which you could address very quickly.
I can't see the chat.
So the question is very quickly, for an unincorporated nonprofit organization, who is the controller?
We come into that. Give me 1 minute. I have that in my next.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Well, next 3 slides. I'm going to answer that question. Yeah. When you are classified as a listed business under the Proceeds of Crime Act, these are your obligations under your financial obligation, under the financial obligations regulation. So for me, for my business, these are the things that I must do. And if I don't do them, severe penalties are imposed upon me as an attorney at law. So I have to prepare a compliance program and submit that to the Financial Intelligence Unit for approval. So NPOs are now required to complete that compliance program. That compliance program shows the FIU how your organization will comply with the Financial Intelligence Unit Act and all of the regulations relating to it, FIU, POCA, and those things. So you prepare a compliance program, you submit it, and you get your compliance program approved. Then in your organization, as in my organization, I have to designate a manager or somebody at managerial level who will be my compliance officer. This compliance officer's role is to ensure that my business is complying with my compliance program. So that compliance program that I have in place, I have to have an officer who views my day-to-day operations and makes an assessment independently of me as an owner of this business, that my business is complying with the compliance program. My compliance officer has to be trained annually in AML, CFC, and PF requirements. So I'm using my experience only to show you that I am aware of what is required, but also to explain that all non-profit organizations are required now to do this because you are listed as a listed business under the Proceeds of Crime Act. You have to make arrangements for ongoing training of your directors and members of staff. You have to establish internal rules to support your compliance program. You have to have your compliance program reviewed annually, both by internal and external auditors. You have to implement know your client and source of funds measures for all persons who wish to become members and contributors to your organization. So those who do active participation in the day-to-day operations of your nonprofit organization, and persons who contribute, whether in kind or through financing, one day contributing towards your purpose, contributing towards your objective. You have to do KYC and forms for them. And then you have to maintain a suspicious activity and a suspicious transaction log, which has to be submitted to the Financial Intelligence Unit. In addition, NPOs with a gross annual income that exceeds 500,000 shall be supervised by the FIU. So even outside of the risk assessment, because remember the risk assessment form will determine whether or not the NPO will be supervised and regulated by the FIU, right? Determining the level of risk. If your annual income grosses 500,000, you automatically will be supervised without even that risk assessment. What comprises your annual income? This is key. It's not just your financial contribution, what you get per year, you know, from the purposes that you like a membership subscription and stuff like that. It's not just that. It comprises, yes, income that is derived from the provision of goods and services that you offer, rental income if you have property and you're renting it, interest and other income received from investment. So if you have an investment account and you have money invested, you know, like you have put away some cash, donations and subventions that you receive, not just from the government, from anybody, loans, and any other income, cash or monetary worth of property and assets acquired. So all of this collectively must gross the $500,000. So you might say, well, my subscription for membership is just $200,000 per annum. But that is just one element. Everything else is taken into account to determine what your gross annual income will be. So any particular financial year. So the FIU will use the risk-based approach in determining the level of supervision required. I said that before. And how they will do that is through the questionnaire, right? Right, so this is an answer to a question that was asked. Who is a controller? Controller of an NPO. Sorry, I didn't get to that yet. A controller of an NPO shall ensure that proper financial accounts and records of the following are kept. So all cash received and expended must be kept. All gifts, sales, and purchases of property. All sums of cash raised through fundraising. Any non-monetary transactions of property, all assets and all liabilities, and any other matter that may be prescribed by regulation. So your accounting now changes. So let's go back to that example we had of our little club in Maruga. You think they would have been concerned with any of these things? There are these ladies that sit down over tea in the afternoon to determine how they're going to raise funds to support this purpose and objective that they have. They wouldn't have been concerned with any of these things. But the dynamics have now changed. You know, once you're involved in any of those kind of activities, your way of operating has changed significantly. And the person who is deemed to be the controller must have a proper recording of any income coming in, coming out, items that you've expended money on, gifts that you've received. You must have that recording to produce to the FIU if you are called upon to produce it. Yeah? Who is an NPO? Sorry, who is the controller of an NPO? A person who has the control or management of the NPO. And that person can include the directors. If it is a company, a nonprofit company, the directors of a company. If it is a trust, the persons who are the trustees. If it's not a company, it's not a trust. Like just the group of persons coming together. It's the person who has responsibility for the management or administration of it. So, you know, some of us like to push up and be the lead. I am the boss in this place. That person will be the controller. The person who has the lead for the management and administration. It also includes any senior officers. So if you have an executive, so you're an unincorporated group and you have the group of key personnel, you know, and if you fall within that group of key personnel, you would be considered a controller.
You might have watermelon there, lady fruit.
A person not specified in A to C, where the NPO is controlled and managed by that person. This is your one-man NPO. So if you have, you know, one person, you know, ready running the show, then that person would be considered the controller.
Okay, we have a quick question here, Sonji. Let me just ask it to you. So it's a question from Vonetta Adams. She says that she's been given the responsibility to set up an NGO. She wants to know, am I required to advise that a compliance officer must be hired and must the NGO be incorporated as a company under the Companies Act?
No, the NPO doesn't have to be incorporated unless you want your NGO to have that formal structure. You don't have to be incorporated. That formal corporate structure works for some people and it doesn't work for others. But if you want that formal corporate structure, then you can be incorporated as a company. But you don't have to be incorporated as a company to run an NGO. And in response to the question dealing with the compliance officer,
it is not a hiring of a compliance officer. You know, you have your NPO, you have the group of persons come together, whether it's unincorporatedly or incorporatedly. Out of that group, one of the persons who are at the senior level, one of the controllers, so to speak, has to be identified as a compliance officer. So it's not a post that you advertise. Actually, you're not even supposed to advertise it because nobody outside of your internal group is supposed to know who your compliance officer is. So it is somebody already within the organization at that senior level is designated a compliance officer. So in my firm, somebody at our senior level, we would have said, hey, you would be the compliance officer. So it's not a post that we go and fill and that person is only the compliance officer. So you don't have to hire a compliance officer, so to speak. You have to designate someone at the senior level to be the compliance officer.
Okay, so that may also answer the second question, which was, is it that all directors and they need to be listed as the controllers, or if it's only one person?
All directors, all trustees, all persons at the executive or managerial level, they're all controllers. So I'm sorry you didn't see the form, that form one that I pull up, which you're going to have. You will see they put lots of spaces because they anticipate that it's not going to be one control. I think they have four spaces. And then they tell you, please use additional sheet if so required. If you have an organization and seven of you want to be, you know, at the senior level, it's all the persons who are the directors, or if it's an incorporated company, all the persons who are the trustees, who is a trust institute, all the persons who are in the executive or at the managerial level, for, you know, an unincorporated body. And the form caters for multiple names being stated.
Yeah. Okay, and just one final question was asked earlier. So what happens if your organization's gross falls under the $500,000?
Let me answer this very cautiously. You will not automatically be under the controls of the FIA. Once you go $500,000 and over, you are automatically going to be regulated by the FIU. Yes? You would additionally be regulated by the FIU if after you complete your risk assessment questionnaire and from the responses you give, it appears that you might be a little fledgling thing saying that it's only $10 a year that I make, but based on the responses you give to that question, that questionnaire, it can be ascertained that there is opportunity for abuse through your organization, for terrorism and those sorts of things that they're trying to protect against, you would be moved over to that heavier regulation. Yes? Regulation by the FIU. So if you're under 500,000, you're not regulated by the FIU. But there's still an opportunity for you to be, like using the word opportunity very loosely, there's still a chance for you to be regulated if based on the questions in the questionnaire, it deems that you are at risk for abuse. You know, that some terrorists could use your organization to filter through money and the like. You know, you're getting donations of $25,000 every year and you're not asking any questions about it. You're just taking it, banking it, and passing it on. You know, then you would move over to FIU regulation.
Okay, and one question just came in. Are trade unions also considered that was my hand just went up. Trade unions caught by this legislation?
Yes. There's no exemption. The only exemption that the legislation gave us, the friendly societies, everybody else, the court, churches are caught. So if churches are caught, why not trade unions?
Okay. So that would also answer another question, which just came in, as statutory authorities or entities formed under an act of parliament.
No.
Subject.
Those are those bodies that are formed. Well, I shouldn't say no. Those entities that are incorporated by statute were not automatically brought under the realm of regulation. I don't know if that is the intention in the future, but it doesn't cater for those bodies incorporated by statute. There's no reference in the legislation bodies incorporated by statute. So, you know, there are some churches that have the benefit of being incorporated by statute.
Yes. Okay. So Well, we have questions. Let me tell persons as well. We will take all your questions.
I just have two slides, so let me just finish these two slides, and then we will take some questions.
Good. And also the share, if for any reason we don't get an opportunity to answer all the questions, still ask them. You could also send those questions in to us by email, and we will consolidate and get the response to you.
I certainly will, because I know I'm a little bit over my time in terms of when I'm supposed to wrap up here.
So, yeah, that's okay. Go ahead, Sanjay.
Two more slides, NPOs with gross annual income exceeding 10 million are required to have their accounts and records audited by under the IFRS system annually. So you have to go a little step further once your accounts, once your income crosses $10 million. Which puts an additional requirement on you. And a controller of an NPO who, without reasonable cause, contravenes subsection 22.1, commits an offense and is liable on summary conviction to a fine of $50,000 and imprisonment for 7 years. Now, interestingly, this section was not proclaimed. So this section is the law, as opposed to section 5.2 that has not been proclaimed as yet. Yes? So if a controller doesn't ensure that the NPO complies with section 22.1, an offense is committed, and of course the consequences are set out there. Persons or groups of persons who carry out a single event to raise funds are exempted. So if we go back to our little village example, and you just come together for one purpose only, you know, one purpose, and you raise funds in your village for that purpose, and that's the end of it, then you are not required to be registered as an NPO. It really is catering for those groups that come together and consistently promoting a particular purpose or objective. Yes, so the one-off thing that you have some sick person in your neighborhood and you really wanted to cause to assist that person, or even somebody who you want to send to university in the village, and everybody come together and raise funds to send this child in this very poor village away to university. That's a single event. So in a raise funds for that, that wouldn't be caught. Although you are forming yourself into a group and a body, and it is a purpose, it meets all of the other definitions. The only thing it doesn't meet is that it is not a continuous arrangement. It's a single arrangement. So it is exempted. And there you go. That was my last section.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much, Sanjay. This was really such an excellent session. And so much to absorb. And of course, we do have to ask you a few more questions. But let's start with the first one. Are the forms digital and can they be completed online?
No, it cannot be completed online. They have to be completed and submitted in person to the Registrar General's Department.
Okay, next questions. Are the requirements for audited accounts, are these requirements retroactive?
No. It is from the commencement of the act. So when you start to audit, it's from going forward.
Yes. Now, are there any mandatory audit requirements for nonprofit organizations that do not have gross annual income exceeding the $10 million here?
You have to get your accounts audited. And any organization, remember it had a slide up, I stopped the screen share, I should not have. I had a slide up that the controller is required to keep accounts of the income and expenditure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But to be audited by an auditor under the IFRS requirement, that is only in place for those entities whose gross income is 10 million and over. So you don't have to go to that extreme and expense. If you have an NPO and your annual income is, say, let's $25,000, you don't have to bring an KPMG and PwC to audit your books, so to speak. You could, if you have some background in some balance sheet and accounting, you can do your books and do your accounting, but you have to keep those records to produce to the FIU if you are called upon to do so. Yeah? So it's not that you can't, you're not obligated to keep books and keep accounts. All NPOs are now obligated to keep books and keep accounts. Remember, I had a slide up that it is an offense if you don't do that.
Yes.
Which unfortunately I can't pull back up because I took down the slide. It's an offense if you don't keep your books and keep your accounts, if the controller doesn't do that. But to have it audited by an approved auditor in accordance to IFRS standard. That is a requirement only for those entities whose gross income is 10 million and over.
Okay. All right, so that was a question from Jessica Haidar. We have a question from Diane Voodoo, which is a very good question, actually. What about groups that became dormant but was once active for many years?
This is unincorporated or incorporated?
I would imagine it's a group, so it's
unincorporated. If it's incorporated, because a lot of us, I mean, I myself, I'm a victim of this. I have a couple of NGOs that I have incorporated as a company, and they're dormant because I have not pursued it. If I don't wish to have those entities continue, I have to indicate to the Register General and have it delisted as a company, taken off the register. But if you want to continue to have that resource available to pursue the objective and purpose for which you establish it, then you have to comply with the provisions of the Act. And the same thing would apply for an unincorporated group. So if you and your little teacup ladies 10 years ago came together and very astutely, I am a victim of that, passionate about something and then that passion dies down, or you know, we get busy and we go off to do something else. But it is always there on the back burner in the event that you wish to continue that goal objective. Once you want to continue with that entity, whether incorporated or unincorporated, you have to bring it under the Act, bring it to compliance. If you don't do that, it is illegal. If you restart it, it has been dormant, and you decide you wake up one day, you know, when we get these palms of vision, you wake up one morning and say, yes, I'm going back to do this thing that I wanted to do, and you restart it, then you'll be committing an offense. And it might just be your bad luck that that section with the penalty has been proclaimed and the police come kicking down your door and arresting you while, you know, you're trying to write out the charter to restart this dormant entity or group that you had.
Okay, we have Chetram has his hand up. Chetram, you have a question you want to ask us? Okay, so I see Chetran's hand is still up, but he has not unmuted
maybe
his mic.
Maybe that's when he wanted to answer the question that I'd asked. Chetran, I hope you got Deborah's response that it is not yesterday, the 11th, it is the 14th.
Yeah.
Signage actually indicated that the date of commencement is the 14th.
Okay, so what I wanted to find out is just a clarification that you said that if you have a registered NGO, do you have to go back now to the Register General and get the form and fill out the new form and attach it now that this amendment has changed?
When you say registered NGO, Chetram, are you talking about a not-for-profit company?
Yes. A charitable organization that is registered under the Ministry of Legal Affairs.
Okay, yes. So a not-for-profit company. So if you had a not-for-profit company, what the Register General would have done is move that not-for-profit company and include it under the list of non-profit organizations that she's required to establish pursuant to this Act. But that's just step one. You are now required to complete the registration process, which is to complete that Form 1, which is the registration form, complete the risk assessment questionnaire, and submit that with the documents that I had in the slide, the two forms of ID for all of your directors, your certificate of incorporation, if you got tax exemption, your letter from the ministry indicating tax exemption. So you are required to complete the process now. And that date of compliance, as I said, was 12 months from the date.
Okay, so there is another question here, and it is, how long do you operate as an unincorporated before deciding to incorporate?
Okay, maybe that person who asked the question joined a bit late, because it's not an issue of incorporated and unincorporated. You could still be either or. You could still be an unincorporated group, or you could decide to be a regulated structured corporate entity. Yes? So you could still be a group of ladies with no incorporation as Chetram's body is, or you could go the route of registering as a company what this legislation is doing is bringing both groupings under the ambit of the Register General's office. So it's not being incorporated, but registering as an NPO. So when you register as an NPO, it doesn't make you a corporate body. No, to be a corporate body, you have to be incorporated under the Companies Act. Yes, but you don't have to be incorporated under the Companies Act to be an NGO, because we have lots of NGOs that are not incorporated. We have the majority of CBOs are not incorporated. But coming for compliance under this act means registering as a non-profit organization, whether you are incorporated or unincorporated. Everybody is caught. And I see somebody asking the question about churches, which I answered already. Yes, churches are caught. You have to register as a non-profit organization, not incorporate. That's when, you know, we lawyers, how we like to distinguish terminology. So when you use the word incorporate, it signifies something. So the word is to register as an NPO. And in registering as an NPO, you could be an unincorporated body or you could be an incorporated body.
Hello, I have a quick question.
Sure.
We at CMLF, we have submitted all our documentation already.
Oh, very good. Congratulations.
We have not heard back anything. How long do you think we would have to wait before we get a response?
This was before or after COVID? You know, the new normal.
Before COVID. Yeah.
The new normal now is to say due to COVID.
Yes, we submitted all our risk assessment, everything already. And
you are very well in tune. I must say congratulations to you. I wish all my clients were like you.
Well, thank you. You know, but we have just been waiting to hear back from the organization.
Well, I can't speak for the Register General's department. And as I said, the new normal now is because of COVID. Everybody, even if COVID didn't unpack them, they're using COVID as an excuse for the reason for the delay. But with respect to the Register General's department, I know that their timelines have been significantly impacted. They have actually operated an appointment system still, on reduced staff still. You know, although all government workers are supposed to be back out. But what you can do, I don't know if you have the email contact for the company's registry, just send them off an email, because they're very responsive via email. Just send an email, indicate to them the date that you've submitted your form, and of course, wanting some idea of confirmation that everything is in order, because you want to be satisfied. Listen, I've complied with the act. Nobody come and harass me. I've done my part. Yeah?
Exactly.
But
thanks,
I should be able to give you a date, because... you know, unfortunately.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so we have a few more questions, but I want participants to know it's almost 15
minutes
past our time. Yes. Sanchi, I so appreciate you taking the time to come and share this knowledge with us today. You know, a lot of us would have needed to hear, and I like the fact that you really placed it in context for everyone. This is not just that government is arbitrarily, you know, putting new rules and regulations in place to make people's life difficult. You know, it really is that it's important for us to comply with international regulations as well. It's part of being the global village. And therefore, everyone has to play their part. We do have a number of questions that persons did not get answered. There was one from a lot earlier. I thought we had, in fact, addressed it. So I'll just ask that last one. The others, we will try to respond to you afterwards. But there was a question from Pramila Prasad where she said, sorry, I didn't hear the response to the question on the registration of village councils.
To be registered as a non-profit organization, well, the answer would be in the affirmative. They are required to be registered. And the process that I went through in that slide to complete the Form 1 and the questionnaire and submit the IDs, that must be done. I think somebody also asked about churches. It's the same example would apply. I saw somebody ask about the Cashew Gardens Community Council. Same process would apply. It's a non-governmental organization that has been established for a particular purpose. And somebody also asked about whether on when you get funding, whether you get funding or not, it don't matter what your source of funding is. What is important is if you fit the description or the definition of an NPO, and you have to go back to that definition that I gave you. That's why I said pay attention to every one of those words that I use, because it's so wide. Philanthropic, sporting, athletic, social, scientific, cultural, you know, religious is so wide, any of those purposes that you have established for, you would be considered a non-profit organization, and you are required to be registered under this act. And bear in mind that you could be an unincorporated body, or you could be incorporated under the Companies Act. Whether you fall in either grouping, unincorporated, incorporated, whatever you call yourself, a council, a foundation, a trust, it doesn't matter what name you put it, a club, it don't matter what name you put it. What is important is the purpose for which you are established. And if it fits within that definition that we went through, the act applies to you.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so very much, Sanjay. I really, really appreciate all of this. And I know it was a lot for persons to take in. So I'm sharing with you again. We have recorded this event. The recording will be sent to you, to your email. Take your time and go through it again so you can pause and you can listen in and you can help ensure that you get a good understanding of it. As I said to you at the start of our session, we do have some polls, just brief questions to ask you. Please answer those first to help us in being able to make our sessions better. And just finally, for our community officers online, please share this with your Best Village officers, because all Best Village groups, and there are many of them, they all will fall under this new law and need to be in compliance with it. Sanjay, on behalf of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute, thank you so much. You are an absolute darling. Sanjay was a year ahead of me in law school. So Sanjay was actually one of my mentors and would teach law as well. So I knew that she would be excellent for today's session. You did live up to expectations, Sanjay. Thank you so much. You were excellent.
It was my pleasure. And as I say, each time I do these seminars and any learning seminar that I participate in, that I hope the information is useful. You know, sometimes some things go over our heads when we discuss it, and not all of us, or the majority of us, have a background in law. So some things might be a bit complex to understand. But I do hope and I do try when I'm speaking to break it down into the simplest of terminologies and to use examples so that you could relate the law to life. That's my passion, because law is life, it's living. So you see, I get very passionate sometimes. You could relate the law to actual life and living and see how it impacts you. So I hope very much that you enjoyed this seminar, and I do wish you all the best in your future entities. And for your participant who was online and I didn't get her name, who is a citizen to be commended, who even long before the deadline submitted all of her forms to the Ministry of the Attorney General and Legal Affairs to ensure that no police officer come in to pong down her door, that all of you who are involved in community-based work, whether you are incorporated or unincorporated, know that you are required to take the next step. Yeah? So take care, guys, and have a good one. Kamala, it was a pleasure. We shall meet again.
Yes. Thank you, Sanjay. Thank you, all participants, for
your participation. I do have to run some, saying my goodbye.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Thank you, Sanjay. Yes, I know. So thank you so much, everyone. Bye. Have a great day. And we'll send you the recording by Monday. And as well, we would send you the copies of the forms from the Ministry of the Attorney General and Legal Affairs, all right? So thank you guys very much. Feel free to keep in touch by email and let us know if you have any further questions or so. Bye, everyone.
Bye, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, bye.
Bye, bye.
Yes, bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Thanks very much, Kamala. David here.
Okay, David. Yes, thank you. I'm glad you guys were able to connect through the entire session.
Yeah. We had to answer some questions from the public, so we missed a little bit, but we thanks that you recorded for us.
Yes. Okay. And of course, if any of the groups have questions or so, you know, you can direct them to our website, because we'll put the recording there as well. Okay?
You are going to have another one? Because it was kind of, because of the short notice. Yeah.
Yes, I understand that. So we will try, certainly after Governance Week, we'd have a little more time. So I'll ask Sanji again if she has the time and, you know, if she'd be willing to do another session first, just as an update, because I do recognize that it's a lot for persons to have to absorb. And possibly we'll need to do a session that looks specifically at how to fill out the forms. So we'll try and organize something like that.
Definitely. Thank you very much.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Thank you, guys. Bye.